Brigadier Wilson, reel number four. Could you perhaps mention again about the conditions of the trenches that you were you mentioned just then, what they were like?
Well, they varied, of course. It depends which part of the line you were in. So, some places you were able to dig, and you'd go down 6 feet, and for the paradise you'd have a fire step, you see, which you men get onto to fire. And when they were, and you had your sentry on duty would be on the fire step, either looking, if you were a long way from the enemy, you would be able to look over the top. If you were only a short distance, you'd be looking through a periscope. But the other men would be sleeping in the trench, or they would be deepening the trench, or sometimes in some cases in the winter, they might be changing their socks and rubbing their feet against trying to avoid trench foot, which is one of the things we were up against in the winter in these wet trenches. But there was always work to be done. In other places where you couldn't dig, then you had to repair the bulwarks. So that is, you had these breastworks rather built up, and that's the sort of work that went on.
How did you keep warm?
My working mostly. Yes, how do you have to keep moving as far as you could? There's a lot of places where the only thing that kept you warm was a nip of rum every now and again. I used to save my rum ration out of the line. I think a lot of people did this. I didn't drink it when we had a ration, see, a daily ration. I used to keep it and fill my water bottle with it. And when we went into the line, I had a reserve of rum, so that if men got very cold, and perhaps you give them a swig of rum out of your bottle, it went down very well. But that was a problem. Some places you simply had to stamp your feet to try and keep warm. You had cap comforters and mufflers around your necks, of course, all that kind of things. Trench boots, because the officers had trench boots, not the men. That was really a snag. That was a deficiency which you didn't have this since last war. But we had trench boots, which, because you were up to your knees in mud in many places, and that was cause of trench foot, which was one great problem with the troops.
So their feet would never get dry.
Yeah, it was a problem. You always had to go in. Every man had to have a spare pair of socks, and that was the one in. Eternal problem, keeping men's feet dry, and a lot of socks were sent out to the front during the war by relatives and by organizations. One of the best gifts they could make, far more important than sometimes the tenor McConaughey, which some poor mother would give up her ration to get to send out to her son, and find that he's already getting McConaughey's in his ration.
Were waders ever issued?
Oh, yes, there were waders in some places where it was very bad.
Were they very effective?
Oh, I think, yes, I think they were, but I suppose you can't wear gumboots for any length of time and without being careful, You can't stand about in water for definitely.
People have found it. Chilled.
Yes, they get chilled. And the trouble there was so much liquid mud that it was so easy to go over the top of anything that you wore. Mm. I think trench boots right up to the knee was the answer. Leather boots right up to the knee. I always bought a new pair every time I came on leave.
Was it easier when it was frosty and snowy than when it was
No, it was pretty
warm?
Cold. It could be pretty cold then. Mm. Pretty cold. When you were in the line. When back where you could move about, you could improvise all sorts of things. You played all sorts of games that if the ground was suitable, play rounders or something, Anything to get chaps moving. Mm. And we used to have behind the line, we used to have rat hunts. That was great form. Give a prize to the chap who produced most rat tails.
How did you hunt the rats?
Well, we used to raid some old artillery position and get the charge from, and then we used to put a little bit take a wet sandbag, put some of this down a rat hole, set a light to it, bang the wet sandbag into the hole, drive the rats out the other end. But then you had the people with the sticks and so on killing them. Or the company terrier, if you have to. Nearly every company had its own a terrier. Mm-hmm. The terrier would be great use to do the execution. But it was a matter of doing whatever you could to keep moving.
Did you have any other pets besides the terrier?
No, I don't think so. No.
Were there any kinds of activities or operations of which at the time you felt critical?
Oh, there were occasions that I don't think we felt these things down at the grassroots, so to speak, because we didn't know what the reason for these things were. But I remember that it was one operation which my commanding officer, Colonel Pagan, I know he protested very strongly at the time being asked to do it, because he felt that this was going to be an unnecessary sacrifice of life, which it turned out to be, because it's a black day in the history of the regiment on the 8th of August, 19. Which day? Which year was this now? 16, I think it was.
On the Somme?
Yes. Mm. They were ordered to do an attack, which both he and another commanding officer was a fine soldier too of the Northampton. I believe they both protested at being asked to do this. They said that they thought that they were bound. This was bound to fail because until a certain other job had been done. But they were ordered to do it, and we lost a lot of men there.
Did you know of this protest at the time?
No. I only knew about it. I've only known about it since I read about it. Mm-hmm. He himself got wounded in the show, and went to hospital, but eventually came back.
Did you feel that a lot of trench raids and so on were unnecessary?
No, I think trench raids were necessary. I think they're necessary to get identifications and to find out where, you know, what troops were in the line and the opposite. Oh, they were absolutely necessary.
And you felt the policy of, what did you feel about the policy of dominating no man's land?
Oh, that's essential. Absolutely. Yes, I'm quite sure that was right. Not that you could attain it always, you know, but you see, there's so much wire in most places which inhibited all movement. You see, wire everywhere, and very often all you could do is to get out and go to the listening post, get up, call up to the wire and listen in the ordinary way and for signs. But when you wanted identifications, then it had to be a proper raid with a barrage to cut the wire and so forth. I'm sure they were quite necessary. And very important, that one important part of the training of the men was accustomed to getting out into no man's land, to feel that they, not to feel that they must be safe in a trench. Once they'd been out and had one or two experiences, they forgot all that.
Were people with so much wire about forever tearing their uniforms or raking their hands on it all the time?
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, I couldn't help that. I had a good strong pair of gloves for wiring. I learnt, one of the courses I went on was I learnt wiring particularly, and I was very glad I had it, because I kept a special pair of strong gloves for the job. Very useful.
What did you think of the French forces, the French people?
Well, I never saw much of them, quite honestly. All I know is that I used to find their trenches used to be pretty lousy. Not awfully well kept, but We didn't see much of the French, really.
What did you think of Dominion or colonial forces?
Oh, because the Aussies, they're very good indeed. Because they had regular troops came out there. They were first-class material. And then the great advance in 18, they really shone. There's a very great independence about the colonial troops, you know. They're much more, they've been used to lives of independence. They've had to make good themselves out in these places. They haven't been used to quite the same sort of comforts that we had. They're good, splendid fighting troops.
What did you think of the German forces?
Well, we always used to be rather contemptuous, probably quite wrongly. But we called them all sorts of names, Squarehead and Fritz. God knows what we didn't call them. But we never felt that we had anything to fear from, at least in my battalion, that's because we were, the spirit of the battalion I was in, felt that they could meet anything. They weren't afraid to take on anything at all, whatever the odds were. But I think we were probably full of the arrogance of youth, I suppose. You know, we're all young chaps, never moaning about what's going on. You live for the day. You came out of the line. You got as much fun as you possibly could. Drank as much as you could get hold of. So forth.
Did you have any strong feelings about any other Allied or enemy forces?
No, not at all, really. We were sorry for the Portuguese, who got a hammering at just near Festubert, and they made a great hole in the line. But the Germans deliberately blasted them out of it to make a hole. It's easy to be critical, but that's what they. Fortunately, the blasting didn't blast our feathers out. They hadn't got quite the same standards that we had.
What was the food like?
Food. Oh, I think the food was pretty good when you discovered how to deal with the hard biscuit. In some way, I think the greatest revolution in food was when we discovered that you could, by soaking them and mixing them up, we could make rissoles out of them. I remember that so well. We've been trying to gnaw these because we were on hard rations sometimes, but generally speaking, the food was very good indeed. Because, every company had its own cooker, you see, and they made most wonderful stews. And we had very good food.
This would be out of the line, or would they bring it up?
My commanding officer, he was insistent that wherever we were, even on the Somme, in the very worst places, we had to take hot dixies of stew. They're in containers, you know, especially for the job. They had to be taken. Every man, there'd be trouble if every man didn't get his canteen, the canteens at the mess tins, and get a mess tin of stew sometime during the day, 24 hours. But that's, of course, that's a bit optimistic. And now and again, it could be achieved, of course. The rations, parties would get killed, or the chaps going down to the ration point to collect their stuff would probably get killed, and so forth. So you had to come back on your biscuits then.
What sort of food did you have in the billets?
Oh, it was very good, because you still had your cookers, you see. Mm-hmm. Mostly stews, you see.
Would be cooked in billets by the regiment?
Oh, yeah.
Regimental cooks, by the French civilians?
Oh, no. You cooked, they were entirely separate. Our rations were very good. Of course, we had lots of bully, plenty of bully. In fact, there's so much bully in some places that I know that one part of the line that the trenches were revetted with bully tin. Bully beef. It's quite a fact. Because you see, you've got a tin of bully per man. Well, you went into an action. You may have gone into an attack, 1,000 strong, and come out 200. And then there were 200 rations, 200 tins of bully. You couldn't cope with it. You probably had to do something with them. That's what happened. You know, the rations were good, very good indeed. We lived very well.